School's just a lot of hard work, isn't it? But then somebody would say, leadership would be easy if it wouldn't be for people. Automating wisdom from writings. Well, nobody likes afternoon sessions. Teachers don't like to teach afternoon right after lunch. One teacher came up with a clever idea. He put a tennis ball in the corner of his desk. And the students would ask, what's that tennis ball for? No additional points. Days into school, weeks into school, every day the tennis ball was on the corner of the desk. And one afternoon, a student fell asleep in class. So he took the tennis ball. And it was a good shot at the person writing the head. Woke him up. And the next day, there was a softball. I'm not sure that there's much wisdom in that, but it is a teacher tip. All right. Proverbs 9, verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If I had a blackboard up here, I would draw a very simple umbrella. And we could write above it, the fear of the Lord. So what does an umbrella do? It gives us parameters. If you get outside of the umbrella, you will be subject to whatever is not being blocked by the umbrella. It also gives us protection. And so an umbrella, I think, just kind of creates this idea. We've got some boundaries here. And the Bible is saying that the fear of the Lord creates these boundaries. It's the beginning of wisdom. If you don't have the fear of the Lord, if our children don't have the fear of the Lord, if our students and our education is not fostering the fear of the Lord, we're not going to have wise students. We will not be growing and cultivating wisdom in our own lives, in the lives of other people. They might be smart. They might be very gifted. They might actually be able to make a lot of money. But they won't make wise choices under the direction of the blessing of God. The fear of the Lord, fear. You know what we mean by fear? This isn't the same fear that some of us have of snakes, or of bugs and beetles, or of the dark. This is fear of the Lord. This is a reverential view of God that says, I'm living under the all-watchful eye of God. And the fear that that brings in a proper way to bring respect, and a desire to obey, and love, and privilege to live under the Lord. It's the beginning. We've got to start with the fear of the Lord. The next verse adds just a little dimension to this. Wisdom is the principal thing. It's the main thing. True, it also means something else. I found that looking at the word of principal from Proverbs 4 here, and you know how we do this sometimes, we go back to the Hebrew, Greek, this would be the Hebrew, Old Testament, and say, what's this word? I'm not going to try to be so fancy as to pronounce the original word. Sometimes preachers can't do it. Anyhow, but we got this original Hebrew word, and then we can find that original word was translated other ways other than principle. You follow me? So it's the same word, just like I could say something beautiful in Spanish, and then I could say, well, we could say like this, or like this, or like this in English. Alright? So this word, the original word for principle, also is chief. That makes sense. The chief of their strength. It's kind of that idea. It's the main thing. It's the big thing. But I found it so interesting. It's the third word in the Bible. Genesis 1:1. I'll read it. In the beginning. In the principle. So this word principle, that wisdom is the principal thing, again comes back to it's the beginning thing. We can't even get started in our education under God's blessing, unless we have, again, this wisdom as the goal, and we connect wisdom to fear. So we start with fear, which leads us into wisdom, and now we're just getting started with education. See, so much of our day we just spend about the details of what every other school that's not even Christian does, right? Most of our energy is spent imparting knowledge. But in behind all of that, weighing on our hearts, and we'll look at some of this in other classes, but in our thinking is wisdom. What's happening? Are we making progress with wise choices? It's a beginning thing. So important. For us to just keep coming back to that and evaluating our schools and our students and our lives. Job chapter 20, a little more wisdom from Job. Job asks a lot of good questions. He gives a lot of good answers. But where shall wisdom be found? What a great question. That reminds me of Pilate. What is true? It's the quest of the ages, right? What's really right? What's really the truth? We don't want to die and find out that we were tricked. We don't want to die and find out that we missed it. And so man has this desire to figure out what is really for real here. Because when no longer let him agrees, and what if we're wrong? So we're saying, where shall we find wisdom? Where should we find what is really for sure, for real? Reality. Where is the place of understanding? Man knows not the price thereof. Neither is it found in the land of the living. God understands. From a Christian perspective, we say, well, it's anchored in God. He understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof. And unto man he saith, behold, the fear of the Lord, we're back to the same thing out there. That is wisdom. And to the part of the evil is understanding. So what is wisdom? Well, there's lots of definitions. You've heard various definitions already, and you've heard, I'm sure, many that are all good, just looking at it from different angles. So here's one. Wisdom is the ability to judge clearly and to follow the best course of action based on knowledge and understanding. And of course, all under the blessing of God. So that is really the ultimate goal of reading and of literature. We're going to be, of course, looking at stories shortly. It is finally to help us make wise choices. That's entertainment. Some of our reading is just for fun. But ultimately, we teach children to read. We dissect stories so that we say, what is here for our lives? How can we become a better person? From either the mistakes or the good things that the characters in this story illustrate. Alright, before we go into any more looking at stories, if there are stories that bring about the fear of God, if there are stories that lead us to truth, then I'm sure there have to be stories, of course there is, that do just the opposite. So as we read and we teach and we try to lay down these layers of wisdom for our children and build a foundation, there's reading. But we better be careful that we're not allowing our children to read, or ourselves, that is there, at the same time, undermine, I think around, under the foundation, that just keeps working away, and destabilizing the foundation that we would like to be built. So I'd like some answers from you. What are categories, it doesn't have to be names of books per se, but for me, what are categories of reading that you would say, this might undermine the very thing that we're trying to get done in our schools and teaching and preaching? Give me a few, please. Of course, what kind of books? And we don't all agree exactly where they are, do we? I've had some interesting comments made in class that I think other people are like, huh? Really? We find our way in this. It's not an easy question. But at least you can give me categories of books to think about. So, what are some? Comic, yeah, just a bunch of foolishness. I don't know, you should not strike me as funny as they're supposed to be. So I don't know if some people do find it really funny. And some of them are funny at times, yes. But if we're not careful, we can lead to foolishness. So, again, all bad, all wrong, every time? No. Jokes are stupid. Jokes, but my children won't be horrible, more foolishness than what you don't New York. So I suppose New York's the same as Pennsylvania, of course. Alright, comic books. What else? Any more categories?
Romance novels.
Romance novels. What's wrong with those? Well, did we?
Go ahead. Many of them promote promiscuousness or carelessness and torture.
Exactly. It's not a standard we want our children to pursue and appreciate. And it often paints a picture of a life out there that doesn't exist. And as adults, we better read. I hope we don't. But we could read those possibly and distinguish between what's real and what's not real. Can a 14-year-old girl do that? Can she read a book and say, you know what, that life doesn't work quite that way? That is true. No. Hey, this is exciting. This life is out there to be had. This all lines up to start. And it's a life that doesn't exist. What a way to lead them into a disappointing marriage or disappointing life because it's elusive. You never could quite find this to be close to perfect as what we want. Yes. understand the damage that we are done. It's not wisdom, for sure. What else?
Violent affection and all this, like party rules.
Oh, right. I wonder if party rules would come up. How do you know about party rules? Why do you know about party boys? People always just heard that they're bad. The truth is, I do not grow up party boys, and so I can't, you know, what can I say? I don't know anything about them other than that what I've heard has to be some negative. Well, do you want your boys to be that way? Are you sure you do? I'm not saying again they're all bad, every single one. I don't know. I remember teaching a boy who had read party boys. Comment or two he made about violence just shocked me. Wow. Unbelievable comment. I'm not even a party boy, so that wouldn't be fair, but I couldn't help but think about when he reads his comments, his insensitivity to doing what's right. 20 years later, you know, he's certainly can't pin everything on books, but it's a lot to think about, are you sure? Do you want them to make this kind of life and activities and decisions? Are we good with this? You know, sometimes we read things that look a little harmless, but then when it comes out of the lives of our children, it's like, wait a minute, this doesn't look so good after all. Those words don't sound so good. That attitude doesn't sound so good. Get right with the books. So again, we can't afford to lose ground, can we? To me, what we're trying to build and work and build foundation in our lives, we just can't afford things that can easily be avoided that are just working away and tearing out. We have to get down. What God calls us to do as responsible people for children, whether parents or teachers. What else?
Books that promote patriotism.
Alright, excellent. Patriotism. And again, I think in our schools, some of this has been used. I've taught quite a bit American government. I'm going to back a book. But they're high schoolers, and I feel like, I hope I'm right here, I feel like we can look at some of those verses and discuss them and say, look what they're doing, where are they finding these verses? Old Testament. And look what they're saying. Is this really true that the Americans have no other choice except to rebel? I mean, what about Canada? They never rebelled. Are they still under England in some oppressive way? No, just to show something. But yes, if there's going to be some of that in the books, to take the time to explain it, or we'll get rid of it. Absolutely. There was a hand back here. Yes.
I was thinking some of
those notable terms will be offensive to you. Okay. No, I am not. But thank you for mentioning that, because sometimes some of those writers are interesting writers. And one book might have been okay, the second book, the third book, and after a while, what am I reading here when it started out a little more innocent?
Well, with a comic, but we're trying to
relate
to that with
children's books. Alright. Good point. Was it just that one that they were? What about Berenstain books? Somebody mentioned. Wow, they're so cute! I just read one to my children the other night. Or other week. Well, maybe some are okay and some aren't. Again. But what's the problem with those? Some of those. The authority figure in the home is not that stuff, and we men don't like that, do we? So be careful. Again, I'm sure some of those are offensive.
In the case of those, they're getting better now with the second generation.
I hear that, which is amazing.
They're more boring to read, but they're actually...
Oh, you're connecting wholesomeness with boringness.
That's the point.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. That is more fun than we know more. Absolutely. Books that make light of authority where if you disobey authority, it turns out okay. Curious George. Isn't that the underpinning of Curious George? He's so naughty. He disobeys, and every time it works out, he never gets a spanking. That's not right. Okay, it seems innocent and great. We have some Curious George, and you do too, or some of you do, but some seem to be more acceptable than others. Alright, so again, we'll try to make sure that which ones do we have, how's this working out? Is it true that sometimes children disobey parents and go against the wishes of the parent and they were right? Yes. It happens, And people want to foster that concept that children, you know, are often smarter than mom and dad. Sometimes they were wrong. We were wrong. But we don't want to foster that as an attitude, always questioning, and maybe it'll turn out better. Well, certainly not. That's simply not biblical. Even though sometimes it is true they were right and we were wrong. Any other comments?
Excellent question.
The violence that goes along, the lifestyle, is it saying again? You really don't want your boy to be talking to you guys anymore. Again, it seems sometimes a little harmless. We don't need to feed that spirit. We don't need to feed that, hey, wow, what an exciting life out there. And we disappoint our children to make those choices, but we almost, maybe not encourage, but at least foster the interest by allowing them to read. So, let's be careful, and I know we draw lines at different places. I had a student bring me a book the other day, and I don't know why the character was calling. He might have twisted a little bit. I haven't had time to sort out. Happened just before that. But he put a book on the fourth or fifth grade teacher's desk and said, my parents said, bring it back. I'm not allowed to read it. It's not about the library. Give it to me. Put it on my desk. I'm going to read this, and I'm happy to compare it. I'm just apologize and figure out what to do with the book. I cannot remember what the issue was. But, and it varies with students. We had a book for years in our library, and I believe it was about the Trojan horse. So that's a story that might be true, might not be true. But there was, it had pretty graphic pictures of the axes and the swords and the, you know, of the use and all this. And I had a student bring it back who I had been working with for drawing all these kind of things. And he's a tough pastor, and I get some of these things. And working with not drawing this picture, it's alone in your heart, you feel violent, and those kind of things. And he showed me that book. He said, isn't this bad? Well, for most people, it's not really bad. It's facts, right? I mean, it's just facts. I mean, this is how it happened. But when we hold it, because it just glorified it too much, I felt. And so, I, of course, explained, this did happen. There's words in the Bible that it talks about. So, that happened, we don't deny that it happened, but we don't want to make it look like it's exciting and fun. And this book, I think, does that. So thank you for sharing it. So, pull it out, because we don't want to foster it. Didn't incite violence in most children to him. It was troubling to him, because of the past sense that he was through the past. Alright, what's the wisdom of this world like? You tell me as I read the after reading these verses. I just think it's interesting that there's a recurring theme. Wisdom of the world versus God's wisdom. What subject comes up in both of these? And it helps us to sort out again what is wise. So I'll read these verses from James 3. We'll be looking at stories in short. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envyings and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. What subject seems to come up in the negative for wisdom of this world, and of course in the positive when it comes to God's wisdom? This is an interesting question. I'm going to just hear all the time. Or look at it from another angle.
The wisdom of this world focuses on.
Okay. Excellent. And how does that come out? What words appear that if we are focused on ourselves, we're going to have these problems that have to do with relationships?
Okay.
Right. Envy and strife. Conflict. He said, stop telling yourself that this is from above, because it is not. Stop lying about it. Know what he's saying? But if you have envy and bitter strife in your heart, not and lie not against the truth. Don't say, well, but I'm on the right side, even though I'm full of conflict here and create all kinds of problems. Why not? That is not from above. But from above is what characteristics, what word comes out, what concepts come out multiple times. peace. It says it's peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated. We should be easy to be entreated. We should be easy to be approached and say, what about this? About, yeah, all right, you don't talk about that to me, that's not true. What do you have to say?
Sure, I'm sure.
Easy to be entreated. Even our students can tell us we're wrong, respectfully, and we can, hey, you're right, thanks. That we can be entreated by the school board or whoever we're working with. And then it is sown in peace, and then that make peace. So again, it's that peace word that God's wisdom is peaceable and brings peace into our lives. So worldly wisdom is dependent on human reasoning and is motivated by natural desires. The goal is success in this life as defined by the individual seeker of wisdom. When I think of this subject, worldly wisdom is full of what we think of as common sense. Now, we tell our children sometimes, that wasn't common sense. Right? And that's okay. In other words, it was just something foolish to do, ill thought through. It wasn't common sense. So we might say, well, it doesn't even make common sense. But isn't it true that that's what the world runs off of? What makes common sense to them, which ultimately is good for them, but it's common sense. Does it make common sense if somebody slaps you on the cheek to turn the other cheek? Is that common sense? Is it common sense to allow your enemy to wrong you and not sue him at the law? Is that common sense? And can't we think of various things that God asks of us that in terms of common sense, it wouldn't be common sense? Now, of course, we have that component that just comes to some wise things that we do. But think about that. I think sometimes we pride ourselves in our culture's efforts, common sense decisions. Well, the world, they think it's common sense, and it seems common sense. It simply is not biblical. There's a man by the name of Mr. Perry. He's a psychiatrist, not a psychiatrist. And you want to read a pretty touching book. It's a tough book to read in some ways. It's called The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog. And it's a book on child psychiatry issues and abuses and neglect, and I've done a considerable thinking and studying on some of those subjects, and this was a book that someone across the day out. And as I read it, had a lot of good things in it, a lot of good common sense things. But this man's not a Christian. He was obvious that something's got to be wrong somewhere. And sure enough, in further study wasn't even this book. I came across him saying this. He said, now, for many years, we have taught that a way to deal with children who hit is to hit them. He said, no. Common sense? Well, that's sort of common sense, now, isn't it? That if a child hits another child, that you as an adult would come and you would hit them. What sense does that make? You stop hitting, so I hit you, so you stop. I mean, really, it doesn't make common sense. Well, wait. What does the Bible say? Yeah, not hitting sounds. Of course, he put it in that spin, right? Hitting. He didn't say spanking, all those things. If I ever meet him, he's still in and today in the world of psychology. He worked with the children in Waco, Texas in that horrible Davidian mess, 20 years ago or whatever. I would just kind of like asking one thing. Did you ever do a survey about all the people in prison who committed violent acts and assaults to see if those are the ones who, when they were young, were disciplined and spanked as children? Could we do a survey, right? Could we do a survey on this one? No, they won't do a survey on that one. Now, of course, people who are slapped around and beat, I'm not saying that doesn't make people violent, but he wasn't honest, was he? There was, the common sense was clearly wrong. But sort of backing away, it's not common sense would say, children hit, you would spank them, you got them to quit hitting. But we're not a doctor, you children. He knows what works. And we've seen what works, right? Let's not stray from that. Let's not read that kind of thing and say, oh, you know what, I believe modern, you know, that's something that the Bible says is true, and it works, and it's verified in your life. Godly wisdom is dependent on God's ability to think, or shut our minds off, coupled with dependence on His Spirit to guide into truth. So again, we're anchoring our thinking, anchoring our reading, anchoring what we take out what we read in it, is it true? Does the Bible say this? Does it line up with the fear of God? Not. It's wrong. And we always agree with what the Bible says is part of the final part. Alright, effective reading. Quickly, and then we're going to write your sermons, because we're going to be out of time as always. Effective reading begins with what? Well, if you can't read, you can't learn from those stories. You can listen to them, but that's what you teach your student person secondary, you do a great job. You figure out, you teach them and they're so excited. Oh, if they only have that excitement at fourth and fifth grade, talking to a little girl, present. Somebody met in Canada the other day, and oh, she was so proud, she's in first grade. I can read words. Well, wouldn't that mean that excitement would stay right through school? Maybe not before, I know, but that energy. Because when they can actually, the mechanics and they can figure out what it says, it just opens the world. But we want them to move on. Not just those getting through the sentence where they hardly remember the first names right because of the concentration of what I've been reading. To, so what? What's the significance of this? What are the implications? What's some meaning now that we can pull out of it, right? And then wisdom calls us to take that one more step that too often we stop within our students. Understanding, responsibility, and application. I teach them some literature this year in 9 to 10, and it's too easy for me to read those great stories, a piece of string. How much land does a man need? The Apprentice. Sort of that talk many times, I still enjoy teaching. And we dissect them, even maybe beyond what the writers ever intended. Literary techniques, that thing. Look how he worded that. Well, I think he actually said it. But, you know, we look at it and we appreciate it because of classics, and then we move on to the next story. We just had a story, The Apprentice the other day, and it has the most wonderful sentence in it. So when I think of this story, I always think of this sentence in The Apprentice. Oh, how I hate reasonableness. Well, that makes students. Yeah, students. Oh, how I hate reasonableness. And they do say, it takes them a while to listen. Yeah. Sometimes when I have a bad attitude, and I'm feeling disrespectful, and my parents are so fair and reasonable, I hate it. I hate it. And that's what happens in that story. The parents were fair to pay. You know the story? And what they expected of pay. And to be a responsible person. But in her reality, in her unwillingness to just be a submissive 14-year-old, she resented that reasonableness because she wasn't willing to submit to it. She knew it was making her look bad. Rather than submit, she was angry. Students can do that, right? What a powerful lesson to just help them think through. Fair rules at school. If you're rebellious, you hate those fair rules and you want to make them look stupid. But when you're submissive and cooperative, they're a joy to follow. Oh, how I hate reasonableness. That's an adolescent problem. And so it's so, and sometimes we have, of course, but it's such an appropriate thing to talk to high schoolers about and help them understand. Well, sometimes they struggle within their homes and school. That's part of growing up. But there's lessons. Not just read the story, oh, okay, well, then you are some story. No, how does this come home to me? Alright, so we're going to look at some things. Sorry, we just don't have a lot of time to do this, but just as samples of what we can do at school. When we need to understand a plot, theme, and then what's the wisdom. And so I'm going to read a poem, and then maybe read a little bit of a story. And so you help me out here as we try to think through it. So we have to understand the plot, and then sometimes the students have to understand, well, what's going on here? And this one's a little confusing, this poem. So it would help our students understand what's going on here just by, in terms of, what's the story about? Alright, it's called The Right Kind of People. Some of you might know this, right out of the CLE 3DM. Gone is the city, gone the day, yet still the story and the meaning stay. Once weary prophet in the palm-shaded baths, a traveler chance at noon to rest his mules. What sort of people may they be? He asked. In this proud city on the plains for spread? Well, sir, what sort of people once you came? What sort? The packman scowled. Why, knaves and fools. You'll find the people here to say, the wise man said. Another stranger in the dust drew near and paused and cried, what sort of people here in your bright city where yon towers arise? Well, friend, what sort of people once you came? of sort? The fellow smiled with lifted head. Good, true, and wise. You'll find the future very soon, the wise man said. Confused? I don't understand. No, I don't know. I don't know. It's all right here. How many characters do we have? Perfect. Yes.
Three.
So, here's a city, here's a man just resting, and it's his city. Here comes the Pac-Man man looking for a place to go. And rather than answering the question, what kind of people live here, what does this prophet do? Right, ask the question. So, well, what question to ask? I mean, he's asking about these people, and he said, well, what kind of people from whence you came? But the Lord. And he, of course, replies, there were a few fools and knaves. Possibly this man was hoping to seek that place. But this man keeps saying, doesn't come to his city. So he says, I have come people here the same. Was that true? Some are saying no, some are saying yes, some are saying I don't know what to think. Knaves and fools, I mean, that's a pretty strong language. You'll find that he doesn't say that these people are knaves and fools, okay? He doesn't say that. He does not say, you're right, that's how everybody is the world around, a bunch of rebels and knaves and fools. He just says, you'll find that people hear the same. The next man comes, what kind of people, you know what happened, right? Good, good, okay. How can you do this? What's the lesson? Look in the mirror! Excellent! Your relationships, as a general rule, are a reflection of what you're going to do. So that little second grader who comes and says, anybody picks on me, nobody likes me, I'm always him. Okay, you do a little thing. Maybe you do young, but how are you talking to people? People do get picked on. Yes. Sometimes handicapped children. I think in our school, a couple of situations where a child's small for his or her age, and he doesn't have quite the athletic abilities, and unfortunately doesn't have a great last name, which is probably pathetic, but you know what I'm talking about. And you know what? They do get some put down that they do not deserve, and that really makes me frustrated and upset. But as a general rule, for most people, in most situations, you get back what you give. As a general rule, few are the people who are kind and gracious and affable and peaceful and loving and give, and they just find a mean world coming back to them. No, that's not generally how it works. And so at this point, the students are already left to realize, you know what? What's coming to me in my school, in my family, or my siblings, refer to your siblings, and my church community, etc., it's reciprocal. That's just a great lesson, I think, for this is too many good stories, or those thousands of stories. How many know the story? The hippie? Let me know that story. Okay. What about the rich family in our church? I'm glad some of you, so I'm going to read some of them, because to me this is one of my favorites. They all have such important lessons. I'm going to just give you some of the story. I'm going to try to drop in and read some of it just to, give us the joy of this story just at the end. The rich family in our church, this is a story about a mother and three children. They were poor. They had an announcement in their church that we are going to raise an offering for the rich family in our church. Now some of you out there may say, I heard a little bit about this. All right. And so they go home. The mother, the father has died, and the three girls, the teenagers, they get jobs. They work hard. They eat very simple. They turn lights out. They're trying to save money. And sure enough, they save a grand total of $70. They go to church, and they have never been so happy going to church and giving this. When the sacrificial offering was taken, we were sitting on the second row from the front. Mother put in the $10 bill. And each of us girls, remember this, put in a 20. So it's a 10, 20, 20, 20. Nice, crisp bills. As we walked home from church, we sang all the way. At lunch, Mother had a surprise for us. She bought a dozen eggs, and we had boiled eggs with our fried potatoes. Late that afternoon, the minister drove up in his car. Mother went to the door, talked with him for a moment, and then came back with an envelope in her hand. We asked what it was, but she didn't say. She opened the envelope, and out fell a bunch of money. There were three crisp $20 bills, one $10 bill, and 17 won dollars. Mom put the money back in the envelope. We didn't talk. We just sat and stared at the floor. We had gone from feeling like a millionaire to feeling like poor folks. We had such a happy time just dropping down a little bit. I knew we didn't have a lot of things that other people had, but I never thought we were poor. That Easter day I found out we were. The minister had brought us money for the poor family, so we must be poor. I didn't like being poor. So we go along, we don't want to go back to church, but he said, the mother says, you will go to church the next Sunday. So shame you don't, everybody must think we're poor, everybody knows we're poor, our eyes have been opened, we're poor. We didn't want to go to church on Sunday. Mom said we had to get dropping down. At church, we had a missionary speaker. He talked about how churches in Africa made buildings out of sun-dried bricks. They needed money to buy roofs. He said, $100. We'll put a roof on the church. And he said, can we all sacrifice to help these poor people? We looked at each other and smiled for the first time in a week. Mom reached into her purse and pulled out the envelope. She passed it to Darlene. Darlene gave it to me, and I handed it to Ossie. Put it in the offering. When the offering was counted, the minister announced that it was a little over $100. The missionary was excited. Hadn't expected such a large offering from our small church. He said, you must have some rich people in this church. Suddenly it struck us. We had given $87 of the little over $100. We were the rich family in church. And the missionary said so. From that day on, I've never been poor again. There are some delightful stories in this book. A lot of things in there I had to jump over. Well, we know the theme. What are some lessons we give up our children? It's not just an entertaining story, is it? Look at how much you read a rather touching story. You read the whole story. What can we help our children understand?
Comparison kills.
All right, comparison kills. Although sometimes it actually helps you make, okay, you're exactly right, something that sums up. There are times that we look at other cultures and countries and say, we're very blessed. That is true. But in general, you're absolutely right. Comparison kills. What else?
Giving is not dependent upon having a lot.
Wow. More blessed to give than receive? Did I believe that? Are you sure? Do you believe that? You really, really believe it? Have you tasted it? Have you experienced it? Well, of course we have. But it's a tough one to handle, isn't it? That's when God gave it and received. Well, last we have a little phone, we have a minute left, and I'll read. Some people I know like to chatter while others speak hardly a word. Some think there's nothing the matter with being completely observed. Some are impossibly serious, while others are absolute fun. Some are reserved and mysterious, while others shine bright as the sun. Some people I know appear sour, but many are pleasant and sweet. Some have the grace of a flower, while others trip over their feet. Some are as still as a steeple, while others need to fidget and fuss. Yet, every last one of these people is exactly, somehow, like us. The theme? Relationships. What can we learn? I guess we just learned what we can learn, right? But what is it?
We're all different.
We're all different, yet.
We're all the same.
Yeah, we're all the same. And the students need to understand that as their eyes are open to the world around them, teachers must do something when they open that book. And they say, ew, gross. Oh, that's horrible. That's gross. It's disgusting. Pictures of Africa with piercing that they've never seen before. Or the Karen people, who I have such a fondness for because my father-in-law has worked with them over in Thailand in camp, who put all those rings in their neck, the ladies, you've seen that? To stretch their necks, well they're not stretching their necks, they're actually just pushing the shoulder blades down. That's a very persecuted group of people, the Karen, doing a lot of research, they know killing and things like that. It's horrible what they are experiencing to this day over in Burma. Okay, I reference time, and that's brief. If you cross the river in Burma, it's where these people live, although they have come over as refugees. It's not gross. It's not disgusting. It's not stupid. No, there are people like you and me. I watched a video, and those parents cried and said, "Oh, they're crying, these people that have this." And she said, "I don't know why they did it. They burned my house with my children in it." This is true. It's happened to some of our students. They care about their children. It might be sad. Oh, yes. It might be actually wicked. Yes. It might be wrong. Yes. But it's not stupid and gross and weird. Do you understand what I'm trying to think about? Because that's like, ew, they're weird and we are, no, it's wrong. It's bondage to superstition at times, or bondage to the devil. They need help, they need the light of truth. But if we approach those people with that attitude, we'll never help them. Don't send those people on the missionary field. Because they will just mock and send pictures back of these weird people to us who are sitting here. We can't help people like that. There's people that need Jesus. And so these kind of poems and those kind of studies help us realize people are the same. They need the Lord, but they have feelings just like you and I. They have relationships with their families and communities that they value. So God bless you, parents, teachers, whatever your influence is, your resources, and take the time to talk meaningfully about life at whatever level you can.